Justamente. Muy bien. Eu me refiro à entrevista de Lord in Athens. Would you like to take us through that?
Certainly. Just like to say, first of all, forgive me because I'm just a private citizen and
I understand.
I don't have any consultants with me, and I did that submission myself, which is probably obvious to the three of you, but I tried to do it as professionally as I could, and I did want to employ a town planner and have one here today, but Queenstown's a pretty small place, there's only a small number of town planning firms, and I found that either they were too busy or they didn't want to act on my behalf because of a conflict of interest with QLDC, so I'm sort of in the pot by myself here, so if my terminologies are not correct, like I say, just if you want to
we understand
the latitude there.
We understand all
and
that.
I'm not sure exactly how this format works. So, would you like me to talk to my submission? Then I have some comments about the rebuttal from the council representative as well. So.
Yes, I think if you could just take us through your submission.
Okay.
And just to put you at ease a little bit, it's a refreshing change for us to have actually a private individual appearing instead of a lawyer or an expert.
Okay. Well, we're both on new grounds. Perhaps if I could just refer to, I'm not sure exactly how much detail each of you have looked at the submission, so if I'm going over things that, you already know, again, just if you forgive me, but
Just to reassure you, we've read the submissions and we've also visited the area and looked at the council land and this Vancouver Drive, etc.
Well, you're probably aware that I'm a resident on Vancouver Drive and have owned property up there for a number of years. And maybe if I could start off with just referring to item 3, which is one of the plans attached to the submission, just so I can sort of give a bit of overview of where I see that my submission is lying, the reason for my submission. I've highlighted the council owned land, and then this is off one of their own maps that they've supplied to me. And then you've got section 1 there in green, which is the land swap that happened with DOC. So I'm not disputing that small section of land, the QLDC land, was zoned for residential development, I think, back in 95, so some 20-odd years ago. But the thrust of my argument, well, there's a few items there, but I guess the thrust of it is that land has sat there for 20 years, in my opinion, being unviable for development because of the limited access to it, the odd shape of it. So the council is saying that the land swap that occurred with DOC doesn't influence their current submission of, I think it's 790. But in my opinion, that non-notified decision that was made back in 2015, where the swap of the land was ratified and it was a precursor to this development application now, if that hadn't occurred, they wouldn't have a submission 790. So so essentially, in my summary, that's what I'm saying, that the resource management consent that they granted to themselves without advising any of the public, giving no one a right to objection or even being aware of it, in 2015 should be rescinded. And as I said, without that approval that they internally made, we wouldn't have submission 790 in front of us, and I wouldn't be sitting here today. They're saying, you've read it, so I won't go into all of the points, but I'll just try and pick out the main ones if I can. Um, getting information on that 2015 decision, as I've said there, has been extremely difficult. I've been aware of the possibility that there was this land swap happening, but on a number of inquiries that I've made, both with council and to their private consultants who handle their property transactions, I just couldn't get any solid information about it. So it's only my knowledge of what has happened now has only come out of a recent meeting with a council subcontractor that's involved at Roslyn Devlin, I think it is. So she's made a comment that I didn't make that part of my original submission. Well, the reason I didn't make it part of it was because I wasn't aware of the ramifications of that, or that that had happened in 2015. Staying with that 2015 submission and approval by the council, they've stated a number of times that the effect of that and why they didn't notify it to the public was that it only had minor changes, that it was only making minor changes to the property boundaries and had no major effect on flora, fauna, services, traffic, and adjoining owners. And I dispute that. Like, we're now looking at a 10-hectare subdivision, which I understand that council have already prepared subdivisional plans on, but are not making available to anybody, so I don't know exactly how many blocks are going to be forthcoming out of that if it's approved. But my calculations indicate maybe 400 individual blocks being made. So I can't understand how the council, in ratifying that land swap of a major portion of land, which then leads to it being all zoned for residential development, could be considered minor. And I guess my conclusion is too, going back to that small parcel that the council owned, and it is zoned for subdivision, if that was capable of being subdivided, why have the council let it sit for 20 years and done nothing with it, and now only made approach after the non-notified decision back in 2015 to subdivide all that? And I've referred to the council's resource management consent approval 150220, which again is that land swap, where their own resource management engineer states that the proposal will facilitate a land exchange and could be considered a precursor to potential future development of Section 1. She also states, therefore, buildings on the site do to a degree form part of a relevant baseline, and that baseline formed an integral part of QLDC's decision to non-notify. So to me, that's conflicting with their argument of not notifying. The Norham's document, again in that same resource management consent, states that the purpose of the land swap is for subdivision. So, and yet they're saying again that resource management consent had any minor impact. And again, I've said it here on page 3, they state in their own document, a consent authority must publicly notify an application if it decides under section 595D that the activity will have or likely to have adverse effect on the immediate or visual environment of owners and occupiers of adjacent land. And I have to ask the commissions here that would they consider a 400 subdivisional development not having an adverse effect on adjoining owners? I mean, the traffic flow alone will be enormous because we'll all be coming up Vancouver Drive. They'll not go, no flow through road at all. It'll be entering Vancouver Drive into a cul-de-sac of some kind of arrangement, which the council won't make available their subdivisional layout. They don't want you to know. But it will be all coming through Vancouver Drive and all exiting through Vancouver Drive, plus all the development that will be occurring when that is being done. And it's most likely probably done by a private developer and not the council. And their own consultant has stated that the visual and amenity impact of that development will have a major adverse effect on Queenstown. So I guess they're the main points I've tried to bring out in my submission. And if I can just talk a little about, and only a couple of points, but
sure.
The council representative have obviously rejected, from what I've seen, my submission, and made a couple of comments thereon, and I'd just like to, respond to those. I've already commented upon the fact that the council representative said that I did not refer to ROC 150220 in my original submission, and I've said why that is because, you know, they didn't make the public aware of it, and it was only when I had a meeting with Roslyn Newland that I was aware of how that parcel was involved and what they were now wanting to do. She also made a comment that in addition to the council-owned small sector of land along the rear boundaries that was zoned for residential subdivision, that other sections of, or major section, I think it was, of the land swap parcel was zoned for development. Well, to the best of my knowledge, that's not correct. All of the DOC land, as I understand, was, I'm not using the wrong terminology here, but I'll call it open space or forestry reserve or along those lines, not zoned for subdivision. And my understanding is that's come out of, again, that decision in 2015, which ratified the land swap. So without that land swap, that land, one, wouldn't be owned by council, and two, it wouldn't be subdivision land. I think most people in Queenstown would be not aware of what's being intended up there. It's a forestry reserve, as most people would see it. It's used extensively for access to the top of Queenstown Hill. It's going to have a major visual impact on Queenstown. And I know I'm a resident of Queenstown Hill, but it's not just purely to do with me. There's a lot of people who are not going to be happy to see that occur, in my opinion. And it wouldn't be being done without that non-notified decision by the council in 2015. And again, referring to that council representative in their rebuttal of my submission, they've basically agreed that their wording is, the way I put it here, the recent council rebuttal, their representative agreed with me that RMC 150220, the non-notified council approval is a step in the process to proceed to the commonage being made available for subdivisional development. This is also a view expressed by other council personnel and consultants as referred to in my submission. So, 1 minute, she's saying it's not an integral part of their submission and it has no major impact. And then in the next thing in rebutting me, she's saying it's a step in the process of the subdivision that they want to do, so I don't see how they can have it both ways. So essentially, that's for my my submission. And I've tried to, you know, I think it should be rejected, as I've been putting my submission for the reasons I've said. But I've tried to find some common ground to say, well, can we lessen the visual impact of this major subdivision and the effect on adjoining owners, seeing we weren't given any rights to object previously when the notified one was done? And can we at least see some sort of reserve park buffer zone there to separate, and visually it will also lessen the impact of the major subdivision on Queenstown Hill to other surrounding residents and even down in the town area itself. And I don't know the zoning regulations, but I would imagine that any developer, be it council or a private developer, doing such a major subdivision would be required to put some parkland in as part of that development. So I'm saying, well, at least can they make a parkland area to soften the impact on surrounding houses? And I didn't think that was unreasonable. It was only a small section that I suggested that be done on. And I think that was, you know, a reasonable compromise if the 790 submission is approved. But I think there's sufficient information there for it to be rejected.
Two things you can help me with. One, if you could just come forward and show me which site is yours on the maps. Well, we've got a planning map here, and you should be able to pick it out.
But it's number 18.
So it is being through the drive.
Yeah. Well, this one shows the subdivisions, the sections.
Yeah.
So that's the council, a little bit of land there. This is the DOC land that they rezoned and acquired and swapping for this over here.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is,
what I'm going to read
your. You're right, Paul.
Okay.
Any houses along from
mine's number 18. So, you know, again, in that submission, yeah, suggested compromise, I was saying to still give some access off Vancouver Drive, which is, you know, a cul-de-sac, that it just be a small fortune. Is that okay?
Yep, thank you. And now the other question, when did your house built there? When did you move there?
The house was built there about 2007.
Right. Because I was just looking at the operative district plan maps, and the zoning is exactly the same.
That's what Ms. Devlin says in
her
rebuttal.
Yeah.
The zoning, unless I'm incorrect, she's talking about the zoning.
She's talking about
that
different
piece of land. Of this council bit.
That's the.
This bit here.
All of it, including the bit which was
the whole of this,
yes.
Yeah, I'm looking at the same.
So that's the operative district plan map, which was from 1995. So it was already zoned.
So all of this is zoned for residential development?
Yes, in the operative district plan.
My understanding was it was
only the bottom, but I think
this part.
No, it's all of it. I mean, you can see it there. It's all pink with the blue outline.
Okay.
That's why I was just wondering.
Okay.
So,
but even so, without that land swap with.
I think
this wasn't under the control of council, was it?
Looking at the records, I think the land swap occurred in the 70s. It may have taken a long time for it to go through.
It was only ratified, as far as I understand, in that non-notified decision.
You know how slow.
Or did all the subdivisional.
You know how slow bureaucracy is.
Well, if it was owned by council and zoned for council to do subdivision, what was the purpose? Why did they do that resource management consent in 2015?
I think what they were doing was separating it. There was an agreement to do it with DOC, and they'd actually done the other half. I think they were just then separating off this piece because the other half was at Kerry Drive.
Okay, well, that was my understanding of
that. That seemed to be what I got from the reading of that. But anyway, I'll ask if my fellow commissioners have any other questions of you. No, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you very much. So can I just ask, what happens from here? Do I receive some
Yes, you will eventually, but that will take time. We will, we've got another 5 weeks of hearings on this, just on this, and then early next year, we will make a report to the council, who will then make the decisions based on our recommendations. So by the middle of next year, you should get an answer.
Okay, that's fine.
Doesn't
concern me. I just wondered what the procedure was.
Yes. No. No. And if you're not happy with the council decision, you'll have appeal rights.
Okay. For
the environment. Okay.
Thanks very much for your time.
I just wanted to quickly mention, I have adapted this a little bit after I heard Mr. Espy speak yesterday, so it's a little bit longer than originally intended, but I shall try and make it as fast as possible. And also, it means that my attachments are a little bit out of order. They all relate to the word they're supposed to relate, they're just in slightly out of order, so
okay.
I apologise for that. My name is Joanna Taverner. I live at 79 Jacks Point Rise, Jacks Point, with my husband and two children. I have a BA and postgraduate diploma in landscape architecture, and I'm a registered member of the New Zealand Institute of Landscape Architects. I'm a senior landscape architect at Queenstown-based Land Landscape Architects, where I've been employed for the last 15 years under my maiden name of Joanna Day. My statement today is provided on behalf of my family as residents of Jacks Point as a response to submission 715 Homestead Bay. I have read the evidence of Jacks Point residents Tim and Paula Williams and Mike Coburn and Chris Ferguson on behalf of the Jacks Point Residents and Owners Association, and I support these in their entirety. Coburn Area Resource Study. In my further submission, I objected to the extension of the Jacks Point Zone and urban growth boundary at Homestead Bay, stating, among other items, that the proposed extension was contrary to the Coburn Area Resource Study, a landscape assessment undertaken when the Jacks Point Zone was established in 2002. In 2015, the study was updated, undertaking a re-examination of its outcomes to ensure that it remained relevant to present and future needs. I attach this as Appendix 1. To my knowledge, it is to date the only comprehensive landscape study undertaken for the zone, informing the operative district plan, including the Jack's Point zone structure plan, the plan change 44 process, and the proposed district plan Jack's Point zone. It is therefore a valid and important document and one that should be referred to in this decision-making process. I'm unsure why I cannot find any reference to it in this application besides from further submissions. The CARS figure 12 ranks areas within the catchment on a 5-point scale, with 1 having the highest and 5 having the lowest ability to absorb change. Figure 14 provides the conclusion to the study, identifying future land use and landscape management strategies. I have overlaid figure 14 onto the applicant's proposed structure plan and attached this as appendix 2. So if you have appendix 2 in front of you, the overlay is in the bottom right-hand corner, and the original plans, applicant structure plan is in the top left, and then obviously figure 14 below that, and figure 12.
So this is this fold-out page, isn't
it? Yeah.
Right.
So the overlay that I've done is in the bottom right-hand corner. So hopefully you can see the pink outlines of the areas A, B, and C. So areas R, H, B, S, H, A, and C, part of B, and part of the extended OSR fall within an area designated as 4 on the scale on figure 12, with a medium to low potential to absorb change, and on future land use figure 14 as SH6 visual corridor, areas to be managed to preserve and enhance open rural character, continued pastoral farming and conservation land uses. The transition line between the recommended land use zones, which is shown in red and which I've highlighted up seen with the green arrows, is a response to visibility and topographical changes, with the higher, gently sloping paddocks close to the road considered inappropriate for development. The study recognises and places importance on the presence of rural farming land adjacent to State Highway 6 on a transition into and out of Queenstown. Development of the Homestead Bay extension in the manner proposed by submitter 715 is contrary to the recommendations of this study, the conclusions of which have been based on a thorough, layered, and comprehensive analysis of the landscape. Anticipated amenity to Jack's Point residents in the operative district plan. Tim Williams makes an important point that rural outlook, particularly to those neighbourhoods on the periphery of Jack's Point, is an important characteristic to these areas. Residents within Jack's Point understand there is a structure plan controlling the location of development, and the structure plan also directs where future development would occur in Homestead Bay. Therefore, they have a legitimate expectation that there would be very limited or any visibility of dwellings to the south of the Jack's Point neighbourhoods, given the structure plan for Homestead Bay largely restricted development to the contained basin near the lake. Properties on the southern part of Jack's Point zone, including Jack's Point Rise, would see significant areas of the proposed development where they would previously have expected to see preserved and enhanced open rural character, continued pastoral farming, and conservation land uses, as recommended in the CARS and as per the rural zoning in the operative district plan. Landscape analysis. As a Jack's Point resident and member of the JPROA, my primary concern is with the effects of the development as experienced from Jack's Point. As a member of the public, I also have concerns with the appropriateness of the development as viewed from the state highway. I agree with Dr. Reed's analysis of the proposal and the landscape character, and note that her opinion aligns with the CARS study. Dr. Reed considers that the open rural outwash plain paddocks of the proposed Homestead Bay extension have a different characteristic to the naturally hilly land dotted with existing pockets of indigenous vegetation alongside State Highway 6 at Jack's Point. Dr. Reed considers that introducing mounding to screen the development is inappropriate in this location. Mr. Espy considers that mounding and vegetation at Jack's Point is extensively introduced, has been successful, and therefore should be replicated at the Homestead Bay extension. I agree with Mr. Espy's first 2 points, but disagree that it should necessarily be replicated, as the mounding and vegetation within the Jack's Point part of the zone originated from natural patterns which can be observed on site, following the existing character rather than introducing a new one. There are two prominent natural existing landforms which I consider form the basis for the State Highway 6 mounding in the Jacks Point Zone. I have marked these landforms on Mr. Espy's attachment 1 and 2 to his statement. So that's Appendix 4. So if you just, we just need to go past the cross sections. So this is the area images that Mr. Espy produced yesterday. The markup is the same on each of these, it's just so that you can compare with the developed and the undeveloped land.
Right.
So I've marked these landforms on Mr. Espy's attachment 1 and 2 to his statement as Escarpment A and Hill B, with Escarpment A continuing to the north beyond the page, included as Appendix 4. I note that at Hill B, the ground rises by approximately 10 metres and by approximately 5 to 10 metres at Escarpment A, in locations near to the road. The area in between these landforms is on a natural rise in the landscape, which gradually drops down to the west in a series of large bumps and hollows where the residential development has largely been located. Introduced mounding occurs in areas between Escarpment A and Hill B as viewed from the State Highway. I'm not sure exactly to what extent without access to contours surveyed prior to the development, but I do not consider that the presence of pasture on Mr. Espy's attachment 1 is an indication that natural variations in the landform did not already exist, particularly when reviewing the topographical feature of Hill B, which has an elevation at least 25 metres higher than the paddock that runs to the south, yet it's shown as pasture on this graphic. I consider that the presence of these natural topographical starting points, in combination with native vegetation stands also present on these landforms, has been instrumental in the success of the introduced mounding and planting. The character is naturally undulating, and therefore the introduced mounding does not feel at odds with this. Once fully established, the new vegetation will complement the existing grey shrub and stands in a similar, subtle manner. Applying the same approach to the Homestead Bay Extension landscape character is not appropriate in Dr. Reed's opinion, as it is a completely introduced landform within a gently sloping paddock in this location. And I agree. This is illustrated when observing the land surrounding the profile poles in Mr. Espy's attachment photographs 3 and 4. So I've just put those at that last page is this is image 4. And just to highlight that the profile poles are sitting within essentially a flat paddock where they are on Mr. Espy's attachment. I agree with Dr. Reed's opinion that screening the development will compromise the long sweeping views to the surface of the lake which are possible from State Highway 6 in this area, and that this would be a negative outcome. The existing landforms described above are located close to the road adjacent to Jack's Point, enclosing the road to a degree and dominating the foreground views in that area. This is in contrast to the long-range rural views currently available across the Homestead Bay extension to the lake and mountains beyond. Mr. Espy's photographic attachments 1 to 4 show the approximate mounding height, although I note the second mounding further away by Area D is not based on any profile poles, so is a rough estimate. He notes that the lake can still be visible. However, these images only show the earthworks mounding height, not the proposed mitigation planting on top of the mounds, which I consider will screen more of the lake's surface. Dr. Reed observes that the proposal essentially digs a hole into an open paddock, locates the proposed buildings, then uses the excavated material to build an earthworks wall around the majority of the development to screen it from view, with potentially large quantities of cut and fill required and significant changes to the landform. From a landscape architectural perspective, constructing a development which needs to be completely screened by artificial means is a second choice to locating development in an area with pre-existing potential to absorb the proposed change. I attempted to draw a cross-section from the State Highway to the lake using Appendix 1 and Appendix 9 to Mr. Espy's evidence, showing mounding locations and contours, and mounding and building height cross-sections, respectively, to better understand the proposal. In doing this, I discovered the following. The structure plan shows proposed contours rather than existing contours, therefore I cannot use this information to compare the modified nature of the topography with the existing landform. And this is also true of the cross-sections. The cross sections have a vertical scale 5 times larger than the horizontal scale, which is not noted on the plans, giving a skewed interpretation of the proposed mounding and extent of the developed area. Although Mr. Espy notes these cross sections are crude, he states that the vertical height is correct. And so you can just go back to attachment 3. So I've taken these cross sections and I've just, hopefully you can read them then. I've blown up the cross sections to twice the scale, and then I've just put a ruler over the top, and I've double checked that the ruler shows the correct scale by putting it against the left hand side, you know, which shows there's 10 metres height change. This is so that I could.
Well, I'm terribly sorry. I should have turned my phone aside.
I didn't even notice, actually. yeah, so this was just so that I could measure what these red lines meant. So when scaling vertically from the cross sections, building height is shown at approximately 3.2 metres high on sections G and E, approximately 3.5 metres high on section A and C, and under 5 metres high on section D. Attached as Appendix 3 to this evidence. At best, the 5-metre high building height is difficult to achieve, with most single-level houses having ridge lines of 5.5 to 6 metres on a flat site. A 3.2 metres high building is not practical, so I assume this is incorrect. I cannot find a proposed building height limit for the extension areas in the evidence, only an assurance that the screening would be sufficient to completely hide the houses by including Rule 41.5.12.2L. However, I consider that the building height would need to increase, certainly where it's only shown as 3.2 metres, and therefore the mounding will need to be increased to screen this. This further compounds the negative effects of unnatural landforms imposed on a gently sloping topography, and further restricts any views across the site. Essentially, the earthworks walls built around the development will need to be increased. Further clarification will be required regarding the viewshed analysis included as an attachment to the original submission. I assume this shows visibility after the mounding has been constructed, but is this of the ground or the proposed houses, and if so, at what height? How have they worked that out? Mr. Espy states that the development will only be visible from parts of Jack's Point. However, due to the unknown building heights in the application and with the potential that these may increase as per the cross-sections, I consider that it may be visible from more areas than Mr. Espy concludes. Mr. Espy considers that Dr. Reed's landscape concerns have been addressed. However, Dr. Reed disagrees. Proposed planting mitigation. The submission maintains that the established planting mitigation will give a similar visual experience to that at Jack's Point. Notwithstanding the differing landscape character between the Homestead Bay Extension and Jack's Point outlined above, and in Dr. Reed's rebuttal evidence, I have concerns about the implementation and ongoing management of the proposed planting if it is approved. A large contributor to the success of the Jack's Point planting is that it is installed and maintained by the Jack's Point Residents and Owners Association on JPROA land. The proposed planting of vegetation in the Homestead Bay extension falls across boundaries of OSA, OSL, and part of Area D. In the event that this proposal was approved, extreme care should be exercised to ensure continued maintenance and ongoing growth of this planting, and that it is consistent across any fence lines or boundaries. In reality, it can be a difficult scenario to ensure successfully, particularly where the planting becomes the responsibility of several different owners and custodians. Planting can become forgotten or cut down by subsequent lot owners who are not familiar with their covenants, should any be applied, or damaged by grazing stock. The design of the planting, as shown, flows across the mounding in large drifts. However, if these drifts were owned or managed in parts by different parties, the planting may result in having gaps or stripes of good care versus no care. If this planting were the responsibility of a communal lot owners association in its entirety, it is more likely to result in successful establishment and ongoing mitigation effectiveness. I understand, however, that no residents association is proposed for the development of Homestead Bay, and no proposal has been made for the owners to become members of the JPROA. Therefore, I have concerns that the planting will achieve a similar success to that at Jack's Point. In my further submission, I stated my concerns over the possibility of infill development and over-domestication of the landscape and resultant urban sprawl by allowing the extension of Homestead Bay. This is because by creating these additional pockets of urban development surrounded by mounding, a precedent is set, and I have concerns that the same argument can be applied to the open space areas between these pockets, with pressure increasing from inappropriate development of these infill areas. If the urban growth boundary line is extended towards Lakeside Estates, then it would be important for the Jacks Point Zone structure plan to identify those areas of open space which are valuable for amenity by formally defining them as shown in scenario B, in order that these locations can be protected from inappropriate development. This way, the urban growth boundary line is not seen as a target with urban development possible right up to the boundary. This approach is in line with QLDC policies concerning the urban growth boundary around the Jacksonville Zone, which recognise the important function of rural areas on the edge of urban growth boundaries to provide a sensitive transition to rural areas beyond the boundary, and recommend addressing this within the urban growth boundary. And then general comments. I agree with Chris Ferguson's comments regarding the visibility of the proposed reservoir on Jacks Point and ONL. Further detail and or controls will be required from the applicant before an informed decision can be made on this. If a reservoir of sufficient size cannot be located on this ONL feature, then the submitter has no stated alternative to make the water supply scheme work. By contrast, I understand the development enabled by the operative plan was intended to be supplied from the JPROA water supply infrastructure. I do not object to intensification of the existing areas within the Homestead Bay Zone if they are executed well and with appropriate consideration of landscape and visual amenity values. However, to fully integrate with the surrounding settlements of Jacks Point and Lakeside Estates, in the spirit of the Jacks Point Zone, I agree with Tim Williams and Vicky Jones that public trails should be provided. A minimum of a lakeside connection through to Lakeside Estates and through the Homestead Bay area to Jacks Point would help offset removal of the original ecological conditions and the intensification of the zone.
Any questions?
Where is 79 Jacks Point Drive?
Let me see. I can show you one.
Yes.
Was commissioned by the original developers of Jacks Point. John Darby used it when they developed Jacks Point, and it covers Hanley Farm and Homestead Bay. So it was done in 2002 when they did the variation in 16, and then they updated it 2015.
So it's not a council document, it's something that the council's...
It's referred to in the... I'd have to check if it's referred to in the operative district plan, but in the Jacks Point Zone, they refer to the stakeholders agreement and the Coneburn Area Resource Study. And the Coneburn Area Resource Study sort of informed the original decision to make.
Thank you. And what you've given us is the update.
Yes.
So is that the whole document or?
No, it's just the updated figures. So They didn't update the whole document. There was only a few items that needed to be updated.
Mr. Goldsmith, we're running early, so we can hear you now. We'll do it for 15 minutes.